Welcome to your go-to source for entertainment.
Wait for it.
Gaming.
Wait for it.
Anime.
Plus Ultra!
Mr. Eric Almighty and Phil the Filipino? Yeah, they've got you covered. And all you gotta do is wait for it. This is the Wait For It Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wait For It Podcast, and welcome to the latest edition of Filuminati. I am your co-host, Phil Smith, a.k.a. Phil the Filipino. Thank you all so much for joining me here today if you are brand new to the show. Filuminati originally started out as a series in which I can talk about different conspiracy theories found all over the web. Previous episodes have included such topics as the Dyatlov Pass incident, Polybius, the mysterious arcade game that seemed to kill people that played it. I think the very first one I ever did was the Titanic Switch theory, which is something I think I'm going to revisit in the future, because that first episode, it was kind of like before I really started writing up scripts and stuff like that. It's just kind of messy, and it's a really good theory that I think deserves better effort from me, so I'm probably going to revisit that in the future. However, lately, I've been diving into fan theories, so whether or not that falls under conspiracy theory, that's kind of like up to you, but these have been a lot more lighthearted, a lot more fun to research, and from the download numbers, it seems like you guys have really been enjoying them. Y'all really enjoyed the MCU one, the video game conspiracy one did pretty well, and then I did one about, I think at the beginning of the year, around January, that was just based around movie and TV conspiracy theories, and that one did pretty well. So I'm kind of in the process of transitioning this over into more so of like fan theories for specific shows, movies. I'll probably dive into video game specific theories at some point as well. But then every once in a while, I may tackle a more hard-hitting subject when it comes to conspiracy theories. But for now, again, these are just a whole lot lighter. They're a lot more fun to research. But I will say this, as you can see there in the title, we are going to be exploring fan theories from The Office, Parks and Recreation, and Friends. And a couple of these are actually kind of dark. So I just want to give that warning beforehand. None of them are like really graphic. They just kind of like dive into what may be like the darker side of some of these shows. And I really, really enjoyed coming across them. For any of you that are brand new to the podcast and you're not necessarily interested in any of these shows or conspiracy theories, fan theories, whatever the case may be, that's totally fine. Make sure to check out the rest of our library. I promise you there is something here for everybody. And for all of our returning listeners, welcome back. Thank you all so much for the support. As always, we could not do this without you, and thanks for hanging out. But let's go ahead and jump right into the first one here. And this one, we're going to start off a little lighter, and this one pertains to Michael Scott, of course, one of the main protagonists of The Office. And this theory from Reddit user YouYourYours states that Michael Scott just pretends to be inappropriate to entertain himself because his job sucks and bores him to death. It states, I like to watch The Office from the perspective that every night after work, Michael meets up with his buddies at the bar and entertains everyone with stories of his crazy behavior. By watching it from this perspective, Jim comes off as a smug loser and Michael's the cool guy, so cool that he's comfortable being laughed at as long as it makes his job fun. There aren't too many moments that suggest this, but he was the best salesperson for years and his numbers must be good because he keeps his job through all the downsizing. I also like to think he plays the fool to unite the staff in laughing at him. There's this awesome moment in Season 4, Episode 7, where Michael is comforting Jim for screwing up being a manager, and he pulls out the, that's what she said. Anyway, Jim looks at him and says, that's what who says. Michael then looks at him in all earnestness and says something like, I don't know. I never know. I say things like that just to lighten the tension when things get hard. Also in the comments, there are a couple of people that point out another episode where it's the episode where they play the murder mystery game and Jim is just trying everything he can to get Michael to knock this off and get them back to work. And Michael snaps and he says something along the lines of they need this, you know, they just let us have this stupid game. And it really shows that Michael understands that the morale of the company at that time is very, very low. People are worried that the branch is about to close. It's in a very dire time for Dunder Mifflin. And I think there's some credence to this because we see Michael, especially early on, we see moments where he is by himself. And I look back at the episode, I think it was Season 2, where he's sitting at home and some kids knock on the door. It's Halloween. And he opens up the door and gives all the kids the candy. And, you know, really, that was one of the moments I remember listening to the Office Ladies podcast. And I think I remember the writer stating, or actually it was the oral history of The Office, I think, with Brian Baumgartner. And they were talking about they really needed to humanize Michael because they made him this kind of like sleazy jerk in season one. And they really needed to turn that around for season two. And I really think there's some credence to this one. So shout out to this user. I like this one a lot. Let's move into another one. And this one actually comes from the Dunder Mifflin subreddit from a user named Flaming_Muffins. And this theory states that Roy cheated on Pam. They start off by saying, I've seen The Office from start to finish at least 8 times, so I guess you could say I'm a pretty big fan. After a few times watching the show, I began to formulate a fan theory. As far as I know, I'm the first person to propose this, and I have never seen it anywhere else on the internet. The theory. Roy had an affair with Angela at some point during his relationship slash engagement to Pam. Here's the evidence seen directly in the show. In the episode The Fire, season 2, episode 14, Roy says he hooked up with Angela in the game Who Would You Do, showing that he has an attraction towards her. In the episode Casino Night, season 2, episode 22, Michael is opening the casino as Lady Fortune and he says, old friends, new lovers, and then there's a shot of Roy and Angela sharing glances at each other, sort of the let's hook up kind of glance. Then later in the episode, before Jim shares his feelings for Pam, we see Roy take off early from the casino night. Where was he going? To hook up with Angela. Now, I know this is stretching, but it makes sense given all the rest of the evidence. In the episode Cocktail, season 3, episode 18, you can briefly hear audio of Roy asking everybody at the bar if they want a drink, and you can hear Angela saying something like, oh no, thank you, Roy, I'm... dot dot dot. This line on its own doesn't mean much, but it's more the way she says it that interests me. She sounds very flustered, the way a girl talking to their crush sounds. In the same episode, when Pam says that she wants no secrets between her and Roy, Roy instantly becomes defensive and says he totally could have done something, implying an affair, but he didn't. The way he says this is definitely suspicious and is absolutely not convincing that he is innocent of an affair. This is a bit more of a stretch, but it's worth noting that this episode of The Office was directed by J.J. Abrams. For those of you that haven't seen JJ's Lost, this TV show was full of small, hidden details that are very specific to JJ's style. Even The Force Awakens had its own little curiosities, most notably the cliffhanger ending and the whole who is Rey's father thing. In the episode The Negotiation, season 3, episode 19, Angela has more of her flustered speaking when Roy comes to get his last paycheck. She calls him very strong, and Kevin snickers in the background. Maybe Kevin knew about the affair the way he knows about Oscar's affair later in the show. Now let's consider Angela's role in all of this. First off, we know that Angela is not shy when it comes to having multiple lovers at once. She cheated on Andy with Dwight, cheated on the senator with Dwight, and also mentioned two people named John dueling over her when she was living in Ohio, season 5, episode 18. We also know that Angela has a strong hatred for Pam. This is seen countless times throughout the show. I believe this hatred might be because Roy chose to remain engaged to Pam, basically choosing Pam over her. She might have felt that without Pam, she could have had a stronger relationship with Roy. Conclusion. Given this evidence, I believe it can be firmly stated that Roy cheated on Pam with Angela at some point during their relationship. A user in the comments reiterated this by stating Angela's crush on Roy is explicitly stated in the Office The Accountant's webisodes, which I have never seen, but I've heard they're very good. It's centered around Oscar, Angela, and Kevin. So, even more evidence backing this theory. This one, I think, is a little bit more fun, but I also think it's kind of funny because I don't like Pam. So, yeah. Let's get on to the next one here. And this one's a little bit more serious and sad. And it's a theory on why Michael hates Toby so much. And this is from Reddit user Athena_Nikiforos. From the very beginning of the show, Toby seems like a decent, quietly friendly guy. He's a little sad, and his crush on Pam sometimes gets weird, but overall, he's one of the nicer people at Dunder Mifflin. Yet, Michael hates him. Sure, he says it's because Toby is from HR, but if we look at all the stuff Michael gets away with, it's clear Toby isn't ever coming down on him as hard as he could. As the corporate HR rep, Toby probably could have gotten Michael fired literally dozens of times. My theory is that Michael's parents divorced when he was young, and he now channels his anger and feelings of abandonment towards Toby, who is a divorced father. Michael has no sense of subtlety or nuance, and so doesn't see that Toby is a far better father and human being than his own dad. User PopeBoho XIII expands on that and says, I'll take the thought further and say Michael hates Toby even more because he's attempting to be a good father. If Michael lives with the thought once you get divorced, you can no longer be a part of your kid's life, then when Toby clearly still loves and spends time with his daughter, Michael realizes that his father actually abandoned him. This could also drive the thought that he was the reason his father left, and as everyone knows, Michael has a big need to be liked, especially by his superiors. This could be seen as a reminder of a big failure of not being able to get his father to like him. And in response to that, user JoshKim7 said, good point. There's an episode in season 5 or 6, I think, of Toby playing Connect 4 in card games with Michael in order to get him to talk to him about his feelings and anger, and it works. Michael is clearly inside, still a kid who desperately seeks the approval of someone, and a father would have helped. So this one definitely is a little bit sadder, but I like the fact that it expands on a character that we all love, and it would make a lot of sense. You know, we see a lot of codependency issues when it comes to Michael. I think ultimately what it comes down to is that Michael needed to go to therapy. And hopefully, as we see him, you know, kind of a more calm version of himself in the series finale, hopefully he got that when he moved out to Colorado with Holly. Let's switch gears here and move to Parks and Recreation. And the first one I'll be talking about here pertains to Jerry, Larry, Lenny, Terry, Barry, Gingrich, or Gergich, or whatever it is that they're calling him that day. This is from Reddit user Grambo Kraka. Just want to make sure I'm giving credit. Don't get mad at me for the usernames. They state, throughout the NBC series Parks and Recreation, the character Gary, Jerry, Larry, Lenny, Terry, Barry, Gergich is seen to be a fumbling but affable government employee in the small town of Pawnee, Indiana. However, over the program's several seasons, there are definite inconsistencies shown between Gary's ineptitude in government work and his proven abilities as a leader and homemaker. Many have postulated that the lovable oaf's antics serve as a more nefarious purpose, and I think they're right. He's a former cult leader. For quote, a while in the 1970s, Pawnee was taken over by a group of doomsday cultists known as the Reasonablists, under the leadership of Lou Prozodovich. While innocuous enough in their practices, the group obviously wielded significant power in their small town, enough so that they were able to enact serious changes in the town's operation and management structure. Gary Gergich was born in 1948, so we know he was in his 20s when the Reasonablists were beginning to form. He was fresh from his 2-year degree and eager to start his career in government, and we can see from the season 5 episode Jerry's Retirement that he also had some lofty goals. Most notably, he was interested in developing relationships with very powerful people, and his desire to have his name immortalized on a building indicates that he wanted to make a lasting impact on the town's history. It's not absurd to think that a young, handsome, and ambitious man would be targeted for recruitment by a cult. It happens all the time in real life. But so what? Jerry screws up everything. If he was involved with the Reasonablists, they probably failed because of something he did, right? Well, we see throughout Parks and Recreation that, while clumsy, Gary displays amazing skill at fostering love and admiration from those that come to depend on him. The attractiveness of his wife and daughters aside, they have an affection for him that is unhealthy to an absurd degree, and maybe former cult followers themselves. Gary's talents are so great, in fact, that when he's made mayor of Pawnee as a temporary measure in the season 7 episode 2 Funerals, he's immediately officially elected in a landslide victory and continues to win re-election unimpeded for the next 40 plus years. This point is actually most damning, as it may also suggest that he has a pre-established influence over a large number of Pawnee residents, something he could have achieved as a Reasonablist leader decades beforehand. So why does Gary appear to be such a klutz? Logically, he's trying to distract his coworkers and others from his true nature. Maybe he actually is only really good at leading people and just flounders everywhere else in life. But really, with all the laughs we've gotten from him, if he actually did help to orchestrate a cult through a violent government takeover, would you want to know? A reply from Reddit user MC Stanky states, solid post. One thing you're forgetting, though, is Jerry's clumsiness stops at City Hall. In one episode, where Leslie is over, you can see that he is a talented pianist, he even makes an impressive catch to save a falling vase, he's also an amazing painter. His obvious skills outside of work definitely add to your theory. And according to Dr. Harris, Jerry has the largest penis he has ever seen.
Okay, so now you're sure that everything is okay, you know, down there?
You're perfectly healthy. That man has the largest penis I have ever seen. I actually don't even know if he has mumps. Forgot to look. I was distracted by the largest penis I have ever seen.
I don't know if that has anything to do with the theory, but I just thought I'd add that in there. I really love this one, and I think there is a lot of really solid evidence for this one as well. Gary, Jerry, Larry, Terry, whatever you want to call him, outside of the office is cool. he has a swagger about him. It's not the person we see when he is in town hall. So something changes or clicks in his head whenever he leaves that building. And maybe it's just him reverting to his true self. I don't know. I really like this one. The second and final one I have for Parks and Recreation is really short. I just think it's really funny. It's from Reddit user Squonkstock. And it says, when he was the 18-year-old mayor of Partridge, Minnesota, Ben Wyatt pushed for Icetown because of his fetish for women in skates. We know that Ben has a fetish for women in skates from season 6, episode 6, Filibuster. In that episode, it seems as though Ben's fetish is just for roller skates. However, my theory is that it used to be for all kinds of skates, which is why he was so devoted to Icetown. But after his fetish caused the city to go bankrupt and resulted in his impeachment, ice skates don't do it for him anymore. One Reddit user in the comments says, I always figured it was the other way around. Ben has a fetish for skates because of his failure. This one's so funny. I always thought Ben's, you know, kink for like women in skates was just so out of left field. But hey, we don't kink shame here at the Wait For a Podcast. Get yours, Ben. I think this one's really funny and I hope it's true. Let's move into our final show that we'll be discussing today, which is Friends. We haven't talked about Friends too much here on the show, even though Eric and I like both really, really love the show. And we watched it for a very, very long time. My sister and I quote Friends all the time. I think Friends has just probably aged the worst out of a lot of shows that we watched when we were younger. I think a lot of you will agree with that. Now, I will say, I did mention at the top of the episode that some of these are pretty dark, and these first two are kind of dark, especially this first one. And this first one states that Phoebe hallucinated the entire show. The theory suggests that Friends was all in Phoebe's head. The basic premise is that Phoebe never got off the streets. She was a lonely, homeless woman with a meth addiction who peered into the window of Central Perk one day, noticed five friends laughing over coffee, and imagined herself as part of the gang. In her fantasy, her pals didn't always get her weird sense of humor, but they loved her anyway. In reality, the 20-somethings in the window were wondering why that crazy lady was staring at them. And here's that theory from Twitter. It's from Twitter user STRNKS. I'm not sure how you pronounce that, but credit to you. Here's their proposal for how Friends should have ended. I'd have ended Friends by revealing it was all the meth-addled fantasy of a homeless Phoebe as she stared through the window of Central Perk. Every kooky aside, every episode, she made everything about her, every instance of how much of an outsider she was, it all makes sense. All 10 seasons were merely her fevered imagination, projecting herself into the lives of the other five. All she ever wanted was friends. The final scene would be Phoebe walking away from Central Perk, with the Ross, Rachel, Joey, Chandler, and Monica characters making a reference to, quote, the crazy lady who always stares at us. They all have different names and personalities. Phoebe walks past a furniture store and catches her reflection in a mirror placed under the window. The name of the store? Ursula. Finally, she turns to the park where she sleeps in front of the fountain. A broken lamp stands next to her bench. It starts to rain. From behind, we see her put up six dirty but brightly colored umbrellas. Fade to black. Now, this theory gained so much traction that a journalist asked Friends co-creator Marta Kaufman about it at a television festival. She quickly threw water on the whole thing, stating, quote, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. That's a terrible theory. That's insane. Someone needs a life. That's all I'm saying. The someone needs a life line, I think, is kind of harsh. People just kind of make theories like this all the time. Now, I wasn't there when she said this quote, so I don't know what the tone of it was, but it feels a little rude. And maybe also because Phoebe is my least favorite Friends character. I think she was incredibly annoying. Maybe that's a little bit of a hot take. Hashtag hot takes and tirades. But let's move on to the next one here, which again, this is another dark one. And maybe you guys will like this one because Ross is also one of the most hated characters in the show. This one comes from a blog called What Would Bale Do? And the link to it will be here in the show notes. I'm not sure exactly the name of the author of this, so I do apologize. But again, it will be linked in the show notes. Now, this one starts off as a compare and contrast from the show True Detective. I've never seen that before, so I'm going to cut that part out. So let me skip down a little bit here to where it starts talking about Ross, talking about Ross Geller. On first thought, Ross's shenanigans seem just as cheeky and fun as the rest of the gang. He loves dinosaurs. He dresses up as the holiday armadillo. He claims to have invented the got milk catchphrase. What about the other weird stuff he does? A few things come to mind. He tries to convince a self-defense instructor to help him scare the female characters. He tries to kiss his first cousin. In the above-mentioned incident, he thinks of Logan's Run as a sexy movie. He's manipulative and disrespectful in his relationships, especially with Rachel. He mocks Joey for being less educated and mocks Phoebe for her unconventional lifestyle. He sleeps with at least one of his students. He is known for being a terrible professor, both unethical and unskilled. And finally, worst of all, there is a situation with his children, which is about to be discussed further. Ross has a son, Ben, who plays a fairly important role in the first several seasons of Friends, but then he disappears. Which makes me wonder if it's possible that Ross's disturbing antics have caused him to lose custody of Ben. Friends was on for 10 seasons, but Ben doesn't show up in person after episode 12 of season 8. He's only mentioned 6 times in the remaining 54 episodes after his last appearance. But most troubling is that it's during these remaining 54 episodes that Ross's second child is born. Not only does Ben never meet his new half-sister on screen, but a meeting between the two of them is never even mentioned. We never learn about if Ben has met his sister, if he likes her, if he's a good older brother. We simply never see him again. Which raises a serious question. Does Ross still see Ben? Sure, he mentions Ben in these last 2.5 seasons, but does he really have any role in Ben's life? When he references Ben, is he referencing something that once was, a child he no longer sees or knows? Think about everything we know about Ross. He's very jealous, he's possessive, he's arguably emotionally abusive, he believes in the friend zone and has symptoms of a men's rights activist, and as the seasons unfold, narrowing down the ending where he and Rachel end up ostensibly happily ever after, he seems to be becoming completely unhinged. Did Ross's insanity hit a breaking point with his ex-wife? Could she no longer handle his nice guy syndrome and homophobic snickering? Did she decide to take full custody of her son? Did Ross even fight for Ben or just let him go, shifting his focus to the new baby he had with the woman of his obsession? He couldn't even handle his daughter having a male caregiver. People often like to give Ross the benefit of the doubt, wondering if perhaps he was a better father off-screen. Perhaps his children met, but the audience never saw. The more likely answer is that he was such a deadbeat father that he completely faded away from his son's life, pretending to his family and so-called friends that he still saw a boy he barely knew. Now, I should have probably mentioned this in the beginning. Like, obviously, there are real-life answers outside of, you know, the television show that make sense for these. Like, probably the actor that played Ben was just busy or couldn't show up for the show. But all of these are taken within universe. So this one, I mean, Ross is not a good person. Like, that was one of the things I realized as I got older. You know, as you rewatch these episodes and then you learn more about how manipulative people can be. Ross has a lot of red flags, right? Like, Ross is the guy that definitely, if he wasn't Monica's brother, he probably would have been kicked out of the group, right? Like, that's somebody you absolutely cut ties with. So I think there is something to this one. So again, a little bit darker, but hey, a lot of people hate Ross. So you know what? Let's roll with it. And for the last one here for the episode, I'm going to end it on a lighter note as it pertains to Joey. And this one is from Reddit user OJCoolJ. And it states, Joey just wanted pancakes. In the season 7 episode, the one with Ross's library book, one of the subplots for the episode is that Joey had a one-night stand that he originally wanted Rachel to get rid of, citing Chandler making pancakes for the girl and leaving leftovers for him. Citing Chandler making pancakes for the girl and leaving the leftovers for him as an example of his friends doing it for him. Now, when Joey is coerced into going on a second date with her, things get thrown through a loop. Suddenly, she is the one that wants Rachel to get rid of Joey, and after this happens, Rachel makes Joey pancakes in an attempt to cheer him up. Now, I have a theory. The entire subplot was manipulated by Joey as an attempt to get pancakes. I have multiple strands of evidence. Joey loves food. I mean, seriously, he loves it. He shouts at dates for taking a single fry from his plate.
Joey doesn't share food!
And he is practically in love with the food. 2 pizzas on a Friday? Seriously? 2, Joey can't cook. Not only is most of his fridge and freezer contents completely expired, but he even admits in an episode right after that his oven is broken, and the only source of his food seems to be an endless stack of takeout menus, although Monica and Chandler's food is never off limits for this glutton. So clearly, if Rachel cooked for him, he would be able to circumvent the issue of why he couldn't just make the pancakes himself. The girl, Erin, when asking Rachel to get Joey to end things with her, used Joey's exact words, stating she did not want a serious relationship. Given his reputation in the show, hell, it's Joey, nobody could say that about him with a straight face. If it isn't a sign that she's in on it, I may as well burn my box sets. He's relatively rich enough. At that point of the show, he had just gotten back onto Days of Our Lives, giving him enough disposable income to pay Erin off. Joey says finally when Rachel finally offered him pancakes. While this may seem like Joey just being food obsessed and secretly hoping she would make him pancakes regardless, isn't it just a tiny bit possible that he had been orchestrating the entire thing and he just couldn't contain his excitement when it came to fruition? Maybe Joey's smarter than he looks. He turned the tables of the entire subplot effortlessly. And finally, this sensitive nature of his character was never mentioned before or after this episode. Typical sitcom writing obstacles or Joey-driven conspiracy, you decide. Admittedly, this isn't the most serious fan theory, but there's always a chance. A lot of people in the comments were big fans of this theory. Again, I wanted to end it on a lighter one. I also saw some theories that Joey was like a secret genius. You know, you kind of see those with characters that are meant to be like, you know, quote unquote, like the idiot of the group. Joey certainly has some lapses in his intelligence, but I don't think he's like a complete idiot. I think this one's really funny. And I think if it came to food and manipulating somebody into making him food, I think just maybe he could put something like this together. But that's it for this episode, you guys. As I mentioned, the links for each and every single one of these theories will be in the show notes. So if you want to pull them up, check them out for yourself, show them to your friends, you can certainly do so. I hope you enjoyed this. Again, I'm having a lot of fun researching some of these fan theories, and I'm going to probably try and bring some guests on in the future when I do like show specific theories. So let me know what you think. I hope you guys enjoyed these. As a reminder to any new listeners that are still here, you can find the show anywhere you listen to your podcast. And call to action for any old and new listeners, if you find yourself listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do us a huge favor and leave us a 5-star review. It helps us stand out amongst this incredibly crowded podcast space, and it would really mean a lot to us. Make sure to check out the show notes for our YouTube link for all of our live streams. And you can also reach out to us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Wait For It Podcast, and on Twitter at Wait For It Pod. If you missed it, make sure to go check out my Monday episode of Netflix and Phil, where I recommended the Apple TV show Trying. Guys, you are going to love this show, so check out that episode and then go watch it. It's great. And as one more reminder, next week at Sunray Cinema, Eric and I will be attending watching a showing of RRR. This movie is incredible, you guys, and I think you'll have a lot of fun, and we'll get a chance to hang out. So make sure to check out our link tree and social medias. You'll find more information about that. But thank you all for listening to this month's episode of Filluminati. I am your co-host, Phil Smith, a.k.a. Phil the Filipino. Do not forget, we release new episodes every Monday and Wednesday, and all you gotta do is wait for it.
So, I heard you're looking for a go-to source for entertainment.
Wait for it.
Gaming?
Wait for it.
Anime?
Plus Ultra!
Mr. Eric Almighty and Phil the Filipino?
Yeah, they've got you covered.
And all you gotta do is wait for it. This is the Wait For It Podcast.